Stephen Schneider was an amazing character. The Patient from Hell, one of his books. Science as a Contact Sport, another book. Sums it up, really. He got bruised, and now he's died. Thoughts about him in this very physical science show. You're on ABC Radio National. Hello, I'm Robin Williams, and Steve Schneider spoke on this very programme early in July, vigorously and fluently, despite his obvious infirmity, on climate, as usual. He was a top climate scientist, fellow of the National Academy in the US, and always keen to emphasise uncertainty in the science itself, but also the urgent need to make prudent decisions. And he was used to people denying there was a problem.
Yes, I'm quite familiar, Robin, with that view. The Department of Energy in the United States recently had a high official testify before the United States Senate, and I happen to have been sitting next to that official, and we had a clash over exactly this issue of whether the present evidence was sufficient for policy. And they said that there was too much uncertainty for us to invest any substantial sum of money, because why should we hedge against a problem whose dimensions we don't understand? And what I said was that platitudes about scientific uncertainty had been used by the Department of Energy for the last 20 years to avoid action. And what made me angry was that they claimed that it was scientifically unjustified to act. It depends more whether you fear investing present resources as a hedge against future change, or whether you fear more having the world perform the experiment of rapid climate change without trying to do something to slow it down. Let me go beyond that. I would not argue that the world should take literally the details of the scientific projections for the future. We can't know the exact distribution of where it's wetter and drier, but I think we have to take very seriously these calculations, because the probability of the world being much warmer in the next century than it is now is very high, well above 50%. If you think about this as a gamble, what we're doing is we're gambling with very high odds, and the rate of our change is very large. So the question then becomes, what do you want to do as a hedge against that? Think of it like insurance. Every person I know has insurance. Only a very foolish person would have no insurance, or a very foolish person would spend all their income on insurance. So the question is, what's the right balance? And that's, again, not a scientific question, but a value political question. And I would say, in my value system, what you want to do is hedge against, meaning slowing down the greenhouse effect, by making those prudent investments that make sense even if the greenhouse effect weren't true. Most obvious example of that is using energy more efficiently. If you get more mileage out of your car, or if you have a better insulated house, or if you have an electric power plant that's got a more efficient boiler or has a more efficient turbine, then you're using less energy for the same economic service. And what that does is it reduces the emission of greenhouse gases. It reduces the emission of acids, which create acid rain that's very serious in Europe and Scandinavia and parts of North America. It will become increasingly serious in Asia as the Chinese and the Indians use coal. It reduces the health effects of air pollution. It reduces the dependence of countries that don't have that much fossil fuel on foreign supplies. And it makes those countries more economically competitive because they have less energy costs in their manufactured products. So the thing is, climate change is just a reason to do something that makes sense anyway, and it gives you a little added pressure to spend a little public resource as an insurance policy against the possibility that the uncertainties won't necessarily make the problem become less, but could make it more.
Stephen Schneider, in 1988, 22 years ago, and we're still arguing. So just imagine, if you like, you're in a car, travelling fast, and in 2 seconds, you're about to hit a 50-ton truck. You do three things. First, you call a meeting of all those who may be affected and gather their thoughts. Secondly, you consult all the authorities who may be interested, the lawyers, insurers, officials, and get their reactions too. And thirdly, you can choose to reject the physics. It is a postmodern world. Reject gravity and Newton's laws. Have a nice crash. Professor Stephen Schneider from Stanford died last week on the way to London. This appreciation by Nick Rowley.
The first time I met Steve Schneider was in 2003. It was over the phone. But as first impressions go, it has never left me. I was working with the then Premier of New South Wales, Bob Carr. He asked me to just check a few facts in an extended article I was assisting him with on the climate problem. Bob had met Steve the previous evening, along with his longtime friend, Stanford academic Paul Ehrlich, and their respective wives. This was well before climate change was receiving serious public and media focus. Before An Inconvenient Truth, Hurricane Katrina, the drought, the Stern Review, or any grand enjoinders regarding moral challenge. 7 years ago, for the Premier, the science was convincing and his job was to alert people to the potential risks, help build a politics and develop serious responses. I was familiar with Steve's work and, as a humble advisor, a little in awe of receiving advice and input from someone who had devoted his career to the science of global warming and climate change. After faxing through my draft, my call was put through by the hotel concierge. "Nick, brilliant," were his first words, with the verbal speed of a New York pretzel seller. No time for introductions. There was work to do. For the next 10 minutes, Steve built on his opening to suggest new ways to make a case, new data that could be included, new work that I should read. By the end of the call, my brilliance was no more than a few sentences, the article now rich with powerful arguments and evidence. I was invited to Stanford, promised that further material would be sent, and introductions made. I felt I had made a friend. Each time we spoke or met over the coming years, in Sydney, London, Adelaide, or Copenhagen, his enthusiasm and passion was undiminished. For all the time I knew Steve, whenever we met, he was either in the midst of a group of people or walking at pace towards me, keen to say hello and share some new thought or insight. Whether working in the Premier's office high above Sydney, in Whitehall, or at a UN meeting, part of me looked forward to the day when an email or a call would come through from Steve, telling me that a piece of research had revealed the risks of the climate problem to be less. I know he dearly wanted to find that research too, for he loved the planet with a passion, always taking the time to see some bird that wasn't yet on the list from Queensland or the deserts of South Australia. And he loved people. If Steve was ever in a conversation, he was well and truly in it, engaged and interested and present, listening intently to every word and nuance before making his contribution. Never the demeanour of the grand professor. Whether a keen undergraduate, a besuited chief executive, or a UN negotiator, in Steve's company, you were the most important person in his world at that point in time. But Steve certainly had an ego. He was feisty and loved the limelight at the pointy end of climate politics and policy. His CV makes much of him advising every president since Nixon. Sadly, half of them weren't listening, and I've never quite understood what those roles meant or involved. His last book, Science as a Contact Sport, speaks volumes about his approach. Direct, crude, and not always that strategic. But he was consistently true to himself and true to the science of this most wicked of problems. The last time I saw Stephen was a year ago in Copenhagen at the World Business Summit on Climate Change. It was a crowded room. I was stressed and busy, surrounded by people and the complexity of trying to draft something constructive and relevant to the international treaty deliberations. Steve left the coffee queue and walked purposely over to touch me on the shoulder and say hi, full of his usual energy and enthusiasm. I wasn't at my best. I wasn't present. My mind was on other things. I didn't see Steve when he was in Sydney last month, but friends told me he was unwell. Something to do with the drugs for the cancer he had famously defeated years back. I wrote him a short card. Knowing that his office at Stanford might have moved, I checked the address on the web. And there, looking at me, in black and white, was Starsky, young and handsome with a wild bush of 1970s hair. Unwell? If his website was to be believed, those drugs were working just fine. Over more than 35 years, No one did more to raise awareness and shift attitudes on climate change. Not everyone may realise it now, but for that, humanity can be truly grateful. So, goodbye, Stephen. I don't know if you ever read my card. And thanks. Thanks for sharing your passion, your humanity, wit and generosity with so many. You will be missed.
Nick Rowley was advisor to both Premier Bob Carr in New South Wales and Tony Blair in Downing Street, and now runs Kinesis in Sydney. And Steve Schneider's typically open engagement with those who didn't agree with his own attitudes on climate can be seen soon on Insight on SBS television.
Well, what we've done is gone to the literature and looked at a couple of thousand studies. And we simply asked, of all these observations made by these ecologists over the last, say, 20 to 50 years, how many are reporting changes in when trees flower, when birds lay eggs, when they migrate from the tropics to the high latitudes? And what we found was, although the majority of species aren't showing it yet, there is a minority of species showing change. So then we said, okay, how many of them are coming back the way you would expect from physiological theory? Namely, if it's getting warmer, the flowering should be earlier. If it's getting warmer, they should come back from the tropics earlier, and so forth. And it turns out about 80% of the species that are changing in the direction you would predict. That is an unbelievably loaded coin. There's about 700 species. If you took a coin and you flipped it 700 times and 80% of the times it came up heads, you'd be pretty sure that was a loaded coin. And we're pretty sure that we have a clear, discernible signal of the recent temperature warming on plants and animals.
Stephen Schneider on The Science Show in 2003 on the work of Terry Root, his wife, also at Stanford. They did plenty here in Australia on our own plants and animals.